Hello, my friends. It's Thursday, April 10th, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belleville, your Red State refugee. And welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. So glad to be with you this morning, and sorry I missed you yesterday for Wednesday's program. We had some problems with the website. For some reason, there was a massive attack on my website. I don't know, maybe a whole bunch of you are downloading the podcast now. But it seems to be fixed today, so we'll get you updated on what's happening all around the world and in my neck of the woods. First, we're going to talk about this so-called Liberation Day, or I guess it was just a week, Liberation Week, and the possible insider trading that has been engaged on a massive scale, and how the markets are reacting to that. We'll also take a look at the upcoming April 15th tax day and how the IRS is sharing tax data with ICE to try to track down immigrants. Wait, I thought the immigrants weren't paying taxes. I thought that was, oh, they do pay taxes. What do you know? Also, the White House is forced to let the Associated Press back in thanks to a court ruling saying banning them for not using Gulf of America was against the First Amendment. Well, there's a new First Amendment restriction on reporters at the White House we have to tell you about coming up on the show. Also, hey, you remember WikiLeaks? You remember Signal? You remember when some of our national security people were using an app over unencrypted phones to be able to conduct our secret military? Remember that? It seems like it, God, what was that, a week ago? God, let's catch you up on what's going on with WikiLeaks. And coming out of the Department of Justice signals that they want to give back the money of the January 6th insurrectionists that they were forced to pay as restitution for destroying the Capitol. What do you know? Reparations for white folks. Then in Boycott, Idaho, we've got terrible news coming out of the southeastern side of the state in Pocatello. It's made national headlines where an autistic teen was shot by police officers who were called to a domestic disturbance. We'll give you some of the audio and reactions coming from the Gem State, plus an update on their new freedom to infect law. And then we'll end the show with a radical rant on our concentration camp down in El Salvador, the latest decisions and failure to decide from the Supreme Court on various cases that are referring to our concentration camp in El Salvador. We got a whole bunch to say about that. But before we get to all of that, just a couple little notes. And the first thing I wanted to note was seeing some of these talks that Trump was giving from the Oval Office in the last couple of days. Have you noticed all the garish gold leaf that's now in our Oval Office? He's gilded the frames of all the portraits in the office with gold. There's this big ornate gold leaf on the wall behind them. It's just, he reminds me of that Austin Powers character. I love gold. I love gold. Donald Trump has turned into gold member. It's unbelievable here. It's so gaudy. So fits the character of the man. So much so that there's a new pin out. He actually has a pin made now that's his bust, his profile in gold. And he's got his cabinet members and his sycophants, the MAGA chorus in the House, in the Senate, are now wearing pins of his head on their lapel. It was bad enough they were wearing AR-15 pins for a while and made such a big deal about flag pins. But now, a pin for dear leader's head on their lapel. This is some Pyongyang level shit, folks. This is North Korea stuff. I can't believe we have descended so far, so fast into hero worship in this country. When we were formed to not have any kings, to not worship any office holder, what a betrayal of the American experiment. Also, talking about betrayals, New York City, looking at the mayoral race that's heating up there. First of all, Eric Adams, the alleged Democrat, was caught up in all sorts of scandal and facing all sorts of corruption charges when he cozied up to Trump and managed to find a way to get the Department of Justice to drop the cases against him. So he's no longer facing the corruption charges and now has switch sides, said he's going to be an independent as he runs for re-election in New York. And following behind him running for a certain type of re-election is the former disgraced governor, Andrew Cuomo, who is making a political comeback and, believe it or not, leading in the polls for mayor of New York City. Now, I gotta hope this is just name recognition and people will come to their senses and recognize that of all the guys that were taken down in the Me Too movement, boy, the best evidence was for Andrew Cuomo, man. This guy was caught dead to rights being an absolute scumbag, sexually assaulting women, hitting on women, just making them feel uncomfortable. In fact, it was so bad there were more cases that were unearthed in the investigation than even the press knew about. This guy was definitely one that should have been kicked out with Me Too. And yet, I guess in the era of Trump, nothing matters anymore. There is no benefit to having any sort of shame or character. So here comes Andrew Cuomo back into the race. And I'm just so sad about this because if there was anybody that was taken down by the Me Too movement who deserves a second shot in politics, it's Senator Al Franken. All right, let's check in on the stock market recording live here at 8:45 a.m. Pacific time. Checking the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 1,310 points, trading at under 40,000. It's at 39,287 at the moment. And of course, this follows yesterday when the Dow Jones spiked, went up almost 3,000 points following the announcement from Trump that he'd put a 90-day pause on the reciprocal tariffs, the so-called reciprocal tariffs that are actually the trade deficit ratio. We went through that calculation a couple of times. And a lot of folks, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, are pointing out how this is the biggest insider trading stock manipulation in history. The rumor that Trump would be putting a pause on the 90-day hold went out well before he actually did it. And when we look at the call sheets for the NASDAQ, we saw all sorts of trades spiking just shortly before he made the announcement, with some of the insiders getting in about an hour before the stocks went back up. So here we have it, a big insider trading scandal. The president creates the chaos that causes the markets to tumble. His rich friends all swoop in, including Marjorie Taylor Greene, by the way, who hasn't been much of a stock trader, but as the stock market was down in its lowest dip, she went and bought a whole bunch of shares of stock that then rebounded immediately once the 90-day pause was announced, netting her hundreds of thousands of dollars. How many of them are involved in this? How deep does this insider trading scandal go? It sure would be something you'd love to hear Democrats making hay about, other than Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, but you know what? They're a little bit hamstrung when it comes to making this accusation, thanks to Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi, who's one of the biggest insider traders of them all. We got a clean house on the Democratic side before we can even begin to call into account these Republicans that are manipulating the stock market and crashing people's 401ks. You got to feel terrible for the people getting close to retirement who are seeing the stock market crashing, who are seeing all this bluster about having these reciprocal tariffs on China that were increasing, going up and up and up. And in that fear, sold off some of their 401k, sold off some of their assets in fear that if they didn't, they'd lose everything. Only now to see the markets rebound. Only now to see it's just a game. And the stock manipulation here, going up 3,000 points the day before, down now 1,300 points today, because the investors have realized, wait a minute, the pause on all those reciprocal tariffs, or the trade deficit ratio, I should say, that all of those tariffs aren't going away, just the big new ones. He still has the 10% across-the-board tariff on the entire world, including the herd in McDonald Islands full of penguins. And the China tariff hasn't gone anywhere. He's gone back and forth on China with this one, to the point where now I get up in the morning and the latest update I have is that tariff is now up to 145%. 145% with our third leading trade partner in the world and the place where we get most of our cheap goods. All you folks that are used to your drop ship stuff off of Temu, off of Amazon, forget about that. That stuff's going to go way, way up. And the other thing too is that even, see, we're in this Trump cycle. You got to understand the Trump cycle. The Trump cycle is that Trump creates a problem, whatever the problem is. Big problem, saying it's going to solve everything, but in essence, it wrecks everything. And then he realizes, oh no, what I just did was unpopular for whatever reason, people losing money, people losing lives, whatever. So then he swoops in to fix the problem, whatever the problem is that he just created, and then takes credit for it. He was on his Truth Toilet the other day saying, the Dow was up 2,500 points. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. Yeah, taking credit for the problem you solved. The arsonist wanting a pat on the back for putting out some of the flames. The China tariffs at 145, they're reciprocally tariffing us something like 83%, something like that. And even if we reset everything back to where it was, even if we go back to Biden-level tariffs, that doesn't undo the damage. The damage being done right now is the uncertainty, the mercurial whims of Mad King Felon are no way to set up an economy, no way to make any sort of long-term planning. You want to build a factory that's going to take 5 years, 7 years to get up online. You don't even know what's going to happen in the next 5 to 7 days, much less 5 to 7 years. So it's just crazy what's going on here with this market manipulation. I really hope, and this is my hope of hopes with the Democratic Party, is that there is, like the Tea Party in the 2010s, that there is an insurgency from within the Democratic Party that recognizes the status quo has got to go, that recognizes that we have to set the moral tone. And that begins by ending all stock trading by members of Congress. If we're able to recapture the Congress in 2026, it's time to put forth that bill. It's time to tell Nancy Pelosi her insider stock trading days are over. She's got plenty of money to live on the rest of her. Oh, what? She got maybe a decade at best? Come on, Nancy, you got enough money. Let's stop the insider stock trading in Congress. If Democrats were to run as the law and order party, and I don't mean law and order in the Nixonian, Reagan, or Trump sense of lock up all the brown and black people. I mean law and order as in no man is above the law. Everybody is subject to the law. There's no fear or favor in prosecuting anyone. If we ran as Democrats on, we're going to take down the big white collar criminals, we're going to take down all the powerful people who have been abusing and twisting the law for all these decades, we're going to go after the insider stock traders, we're going to go after the corporate criminals, I believe that's a Democratic Party that could win a massive landslide and an important mandate to change this country for the better. Well, y'all know Tuesday, April 15th is coming up. That's tax day here in the United States. Got a few things to say about that. First, in the news, we have the revelation that the IRS is going to be sharing tax data with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, with ICE, in order to track down immigrants and boot them away to our El Salvadorian concentration camp. Now, the heads of the IRS are resigning in protest over this move, which, good for them. Nice to see someone taking a stand in this country. But it's not going to stop what's going to happen here. And this is such an egregious abuse of our privacy to be sharing our vital tax data with our Gestapo, with our SS, with our ICE agents. And first of all, I always thought the problem with the immigrants is the immigrants were coming to take our jobs. They take all of our benefits. They don't pay any taxes and they go vote in our elections. But wait a minute, if they don't pay any taxes, how are we getting IRS tax data? Oh, yeah, that's right. Because immigrants do pay taxes. Immigrants pay taxes and don't get the benefits of paying those taxes and don't get to vote in our elections. So they are effectively unrepresented. Immigrants are the taxation without representation that made us revolt against King George, and the taxation without representation that the people of Washington, D.C. still suffer under. this move to go after immigrants is not going to be limited to going after immigrants. I feel there are way too many people out there who are white and delightsome like me, middle-aged Gen X white folks, thinking that none of this affects them. We're all safe. Everything's okay. But understand that they are using this data in nefarious ways that will come back to get us. Once you break down that barrier, once you allow the government to start going on fishing expeditions to go after the people they don't like, it never stops with just that one set of people they don't like. It'll start to become, who did you support in the previous election? Let's go through the IRS data and see who's ready for an audit if they happen to vote Democratic. Let's see if we can find some of the people who lead the elite law firms that are suing us over various malfeasance in our administration. Let's go through their tax data. Let's see where we can start picking them apart. Oh, you work at some place that's trying to form a union. You got union organizers coming out. Well, let's just find out what's lying in your tax data. Maybe we can go after you for trying to join a union. Once you give them this power to get into our data, our secret financial lives, it can be used in any way they so choose. So it's not just going after the immigrants' data here with ICE. This is just the canary in the coal mine. This is the beginning of the end of our civil liberties. And you need to wake up and understand that. That what they do to the least of them, they will do to us. And the other thing I wanted to bring up about tax day that always bothers me is that I've got to pay a tax to the United States and I got to pay a tax to Intuit. Intuit is this big corporation that makes TurboTax, among other things, QuickBooks and all sorts of stuff like that. And in order to do my complex taxes, because I do Schedule C stuff, you know, I've got all sorts of deductions to take for my Schedule C work and all that. I can't just fill out the simple 1040 easy, one little piece of paper and a few little calculations. No, this is some pretty complex stuff I have to go through. So I have to buy a tax software in order to do my taxes. Every year, I got to pay a tax to TurboTax to be able to get the software to do the taxes to figure out how much I owe the federal government. So it's a feeling of being double taxed here. And the frustrating part about that is the government already knows what I owe them. They already know. Every gig app that I work for has a 1099 NEC form that it sends into the government. They know how much I've made. They know how much I owe. And in other countries, this doesn't happen, folks. In other countries, the government sends you a tax bill. You don't have to come up with some magic paperwork to figure out how much you owe because the government says, hey, we've got all your records here. Here's how much you owe us in taxes. Now, if you have some extra deductions or income we didn't cover, go ahead and send in a form and tell us all about it. But for most people in those scenarios, the tax form the government sends them is accurate for what they owe. They sign it, they send a check, or they sign it and they get a refund and everything's cool. And some of our senators have been trying to alleviate this problem for us. They've tried to come up with free file programs where the government will automatically allow us to file for free on its website. But every time we try, every time some legislative solution is proposed to get these middlemen out of the way of our tax preparation, the middlemen and their lobbyists fight it down. TurboTax, Intuit, and the others have been fighting for years every time one of these tax filing proposals comes up to keep them in the middle. And it's so indicative and so emblematic of America these days. There's always some rent-seeking middleman taking money for a purpose that's unnecessary. You know, we got the insurance companies in between us and our doctors. We got this TurboTax in between us and paying our taxes. There's always someone in the middle who's got big lobbyists to keep them in the middle, to keep us from adopting a more sensible, more reasonable plan that would help more Americans. And along that line, I also wanted to shout out a little statistic I saw while I was surfing social media the other day. And it was a guy who made a point that a McDonald's worker in Denmark makes more than a factory line worker in a Honda plant in Alabama. A McDonald's burger flipper in Denmark makes more than a Honda factory worker in Alabama. So I looked that shit up because you know me. I look shit up and it's true. The minimum wage in Denmark for someone starting at McDonald's is $22 an hour with 6 weeks of paid vacation for flipping burgers. While the factory worker in Alabama, their median pay is $21.80 an hour. And no 6 week paid vacation. At what point are we in America going to wake up and take a look at the rest of the world and wonder, why can't we have that? What? How is it that every other country in the world manages to figure out some form of public universal health care, but we can't figure that out? How is it that all these other countries have much higher minimum wages for everyone and we can't figure that out and have paid family leave and paid vacations and we can't figure that out? Someone else has posted online that one of the weirdest and most disconcerting things about all this trauma we're living through and have lived through, you know, living through the tariff wars and the pandemics, is that we just keep going to work here in America. There's no pause. Doesn't matter what's happening. Here we are in an America that's just literally falling apart. We've got concentration camps, people doing Sieg Heils on stage, people being disappeared, cops shooting us. And it's just go back to work. Everybody's back to work next day. I sure hope everyone is starting to get some consciousness on this, starting to recognize that this stuff keeps going on because we keep going to work the next day. Because there is no interruption. Because there's nothing, no friction for the powerful interests to have to feel to make them want to stop this stuff that's going on. From the small stuff like the TurboTax people in the middle to the large stuff, there's just not enough resistance from the people. We want to get serious about combating fascism. We need to start talking about things like general strikes and tax revolts. Well, good news, we apparently still have a First Amendment in this country. It's not entirely decimated yet, with news from the court that has reinstated Oval Office access to the Associated Press. You know this story. Way back there, you know, what was it, 2 or 3 weeks ago? Seems like forever anymore. This, you know, living through the Trump era is like that movie Interstellar. You remember the movie Interstellar where he gets so close to the black hole and then like every second that passes is like a year or something because of the time dilation and general theory of relativity. That's what it's like living through the Trump era. Like every day is a whole week. So how long ago was it that Trump said that the Gulf of Mexico shall henceforth be known as the Gulf of America? And then Trump went and kicked out the Associated Press reporters from the Oval Office because the Associated Press is refusing to call it anything but the Gulf of Mexico, which has been its name since the 1500s, I believe. And whatever happened to the Trumpies? I always thought they were like, you know, once you were born a certain way, that's the way you have to stay. We're not going to change to your preferred names. No preferred names, unless it's the Gulf of America. The Gulf of America can transition, apparently. And speaking of transitioning, that's the latest broadside against the First Amendment from in the White House press corps is now we get word that the White House, in receiving its email from reporters asking questions, will no longer answer any reporter questions by email if that reporter has their pronouns in their bio. That's right. If the reporter says, you know, I'm a he, him, or a she, her, or a they, them, or one of the other pronouns that's out there, if they put that in their email signature, the White House will not answer. Well, we got to send this one through the courts again as well, and probably with the same result, because this is prior restraint. This is denying access to the press based on their point of view. You can't restrict people's access because they have a certain point of view. This would be like, it'd be like banning the Catholic news service because you don't believe in Catholicism. But it goes to show how far this White House is willing to go in its Orwellian doublespeak to try to enforce a certain way of thinking. And if it's not clear to you by now that their intention is to eradicate transgender people, literally eradicate them, disappear them, if not literally physically, then virtually, in the sense that it'll be so fearful of living out and openly and so restricted in places they can work and play and be that they'll be, in essence, invisible to us again. That's where they want to go. And those of you who are history buffs, if you know your history of the Third Reich, of Nazi Germany, you're well aware that it wasn't the Jews that were the first victims. It wasn't the Jews and the Final Solution that was their first victims. It was transgender people. One of the very first things the Nazis did was burn down an academic library full of transgender studies that was leading in German society at that point, helping people understand transgender people who, by the way, have existed since the dawn of time. Every culture has had transgender people. Every culture has had different ways of recognizing transgender people. And it's just so obvious that their goal is to eradicate transgender people. And you know the Niemöller poem, first they came for the transgender people, but I did not speak out because I was not transgender. I know that's not in the original poem, but you get the point. They're coming for all of us in one way or another. And they start with the easiest low-hanging fruit, the easiest targets, the least protected. They're also now screening the social media accounts of immigrants to this country, not the undocumented. We're talking legal visa holder, green card holder, student visa type people. They're screening their social media accounts now for what they say is evidence of anti-Semitism. And of all the things the Trump maladministration is up to, this is one of the most disgusting, is their use of anti-Semitism and their alleged care for the Jewish people as a cudgel with which to go after immigrants and people who support the Palestinian cause and feel that, you know, maybe relentlessly bombing and starving women and children in Gaza is a bad thing. They're going to start looking through their social medias to look for any support for what they consider to be anti-Semitism so they can block or restrict those visas. So again, the First Amendment under attack by this administration. Someone that visits this country doesn't have free speech rights, doesn't have the right to protest, the right to petition their government for a redress of grievances, the right to peaceably assemble, the right to a free press. Those rights must be extended to the most odious speech, even if they were being anti-Semitic, if they were coming right out and saying that Israel should be wiped off the map. They have the right to say such things. The First Amendment exists for the most disgusting, vile speech, or else it doesn't exist at all. Nobody cares about policing your speech saying you love America, hot dogs, and apple pie. The First Amendment has to stand for the most odious speech. And like I keep saying, I'm going to keep ringing this bell. If they can do it to them, they can do it to you. I live with the absolute belief that my social media is being monitored by the authorities. And now, in the era of artificial intelligence, these large language models, massive computing power we have, you know, it used to be you could sit back and think, well, you know, I'm a nobody. I'm a clerk in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Nobody gives a damn what I'm saying. They do now. There's enough computing power and enough of this LLM software to monitor everything, to monitor everybody for every little thing they say. We are through the looking glass here. We are in 1984 at this point. Hey, y'all, remember about, couple weeks ago when the Secretary of Defense was caught along with the Secretary of State and the National Security Advisor and the Director of National Intelligence and the Director of the CIA and a whole bunch of others were caught using a text messaging app that you can get in the Apple Store, the Google Play Store, and using it on their personal phones to discuss war plans, battle plans, attack plans, whatever you might want to call it. Remember that? Remember the so-called Signalgate, a.k.a. Whiskey Leaks? Well, Pepperidge Farm remembers. Wow, it seems like they just kind of disappeared right off the screen, huh? It's almost as if Donald Trump saw that he got his ass caught in a terrible, terrible scandal that even right-wingers, even Republicans could see was a terrible breach of our national security apparatus and realized that that was just going to look really bad. And then, I know, I'm going to announce Liberation Day. He did it again, didn't he? He managed to distract the media with the next shiny object, and God knows it was pretty shiny. And now who's talking about Signal? Who's talking about Whiskey Leaks? Let's keep the drumbeat going on this, folks. This is still a major scandal. We still don't know exactly how many Signal chats there are out there. We still don't know if they're still using Signal chats out there. And they are. Of course they are. Because they're getting away with it. So far, they're getting away with it. Nobody is stopping them. No one can stop them. Like, the genius of Donald Trump has always been, you know what? I'm just going to do the criming out in the open. They always say the cover-up is worse than the crime, so let's just not cover it up. Let's just do the crime, right? Let's just tell everybody we're going to do the crime and do the crime. And if they want to stop us, well, then they can try. And apparently, nobody's tried hard enough. So we still have our government being run in these text chains that are most certainly hackable by all of our adversaries. We have to assume at this point they know everything that's going on. They're in the Signal chats. They're in the Gmails, as we found Mike Waltz was using Gmail to conduct official business. And we know they're doing all of this to skirt record keeping and open information laws. They're doing this to skirt the Freedom of Information Act for us to be able to figure out how they're doing these things, what they're doing, who gave the approvals for what. They're using Signal because they know that the digital data can be set to expire, like the old tapes in Mission Impossible. This tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds. That's what Signal is. Conducting our government business in secret. We have been completely hijacked and taken over by this fascist movement that cares nothing for records retention or open documents, open information, sunlight as the best disinfectant. They don't care about any of that. They're going to conduct this all in the dark. And why shouldn't they? They've got a Republican Party that's completely rolled over and showed its belly. They have absolutely no spine to stand up to Donald Trump on anything. Oh, yeah, there's a couple of them that'll show a couple of bursts here and there, as Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Rand Paul, Mitch McConnell. But always seems to be just too few of them to make enough of a difference to stop them. I saw the reconciliation going through on the budget bill that's going to decimate Medicare and Medicaid. The reconciliation bill just went through the House, passed 216 to 214. They did get two Republicans to vote against it, but they needed three Republicans to vote against it to get it to 215-215, to get it to a tie. Didn't happen. Always just enough Republicans to go against it so that those moderates in those blue, squishy, purple districts can say, well, I tried. I tried to stand up. There just wasn't enough of us. It's kind of the opposite of what always happens with the Democrats. The Democrats always do have enough votes, but then there's one or two of them that pull a Manchin and a Sinema to make it impossible. Yeah. On the Republican side, there's never enough votes to stop something. There's always just one or two of them not joining up to make the stop, giving cover to the others in the squishy districts. We've got no hope but to win the House in 2026. And that's why they are pushing so hard on this SAVE Act. The SAVE Act supposedly is to stop the scourge of the illegal immigrants voting in the election. The great replacement theory that the Republicans keep pointing out, that the Democrats are shipping in the illegals so that they can have multiple mass numbers of babies and they can all vote Democratic. Which, first of all, always kind of bugs me in the sense of, well, why do you presume people immigrating to the United States would automatically vote Democratic? What? Why is it that working class, hard-working people with brown skin who speak Spanish, why wouldn't they want to vote Republican? How is it that being a poor minority immigrant always makes you want to vote Democratic? See, it seems like a self-revelation there about Republicans being racist, doesn't it? if the immigrants are going to automatically be Democratic, doesn't that say something about you and your party? Why wouldn't the immigrants want to flock to your party? And second of all, of course, it's absolute bunk. Illegal immigrants do not vote in our elections. It is a problem that happens so rarely that it's a statistical nullity. It's always troublesome when I have to hear people talk about this stuff. They'll say, you know, they caught an immigrant who tried to register to vote over here in such and such county in Texas, right? Because people don't understand, you know, statistics and big and small numbers, right? Like, sure, you might find one or two or three or five or nine people out of 100 million voters, right? It's a percentage so low as to be a statistical nullity. We're talking parts per million here. 1 inch in 2 miles is a part per million, right? So we're talking small numbers as compared to what Republicans do on a mass scale with kicking people off of voter rolls, with shutting down polling stations in minority neighborhoods, with all of the voter suppression tactics that they engage in. That's where the voter manipulation is happening, not from one or two immigrants who might have tried mistakenly to sign up to vote. And then we get news that people like Tulsi Gabbard, our director of national intelligence, who said she had a home in Texas, said she had a homestead exemption in Texas, said she lived in Texas, and yet voted in Hawaii. Or do I have that backwards? Does she live in Hawaii and vote in Texas? Regardless, there she is, Tulsi Gabbard, one of the leaders of the nation, doing a little bit of voter fraud. And we see all sorts of Republican stories coming out like that when it comes to the voters and the voting fraud. So I know there are many, many scandals that are going to pile up through that Trump maladministration. Let's not get buried in the fire hose of shit when they're flooding the zone with all of this malfeasance. Keep your eye on the ball and remember that this signal leak, this whiskey leak scandal, should not go away. Do not forget about it. Continue to press your Democratic members of Congress to investigate this. I was flipping through the social media feed when I came upon this story where the Department of Justice is calling
for restitution to the January 6th insurrectionists for the money they paid back to the United States government to cover the destruction they wrought upon the halls of our Capitol. Yeah, when the J6 people, you know, the low-level ones that Merrick Garland got around to prosecuting, when the J6 people, the insurrectionists, the traitors, the Confederates, broke into our Capitol, broke windows, pounded down doors, destroyed chairs, smeared shit on the walls, when they did all that and got convicted, many of them, in their conviction, and in addition to the time they had to serve, had to face restitution. They had to pay back the damage they had done to the Capitol. Well, now, our Attorney General Pam Bondi, the Department of Justice, is saying, well, since these people have been pardoned, since January 6th, in essence, never actually happened, they were just tourists trying to show their love. Since those crimes have been wiped away from their record, so should the restitution. They should get their money back, the money they paid in to fix the chairs and the windows and the doors and to wipe down the walls. They should get their money back because their crimes were wiped off their record. J6 never happened. The windows never got broke. Shit never got smeared on the walls. They just want to erase it all, make it all go away, which I think it's interesting that that's a standard now. That's kind of cool, right? If you commit a crime and then you had to pay restitution or lose benefits from that, lose income, lose wealth, then you should get it back. If it's pardoned, if it's expunged, you should get all that back. Well, what a nice precedent for my lady love. She saw this story and she said, oh, we get our money back now if our crime is no longer on our record. So those 29 felonies that were expunged off my record for getting raided for running a marijuana dispensary in 2012, that means I should get the money back and the pot back that the cops took from me, right? Since that crime doesn't exist anymore on my record, just like the January 6th people, I should get my pot and my money back. Time now for our Boycott Idaho segment, where we remind you of all the reasons you should avoid the handmade state. And in particular, boycott the Idaho potato. No red state is more singularly associated with one product than Idaho and the potato. Do without the potato. Get onion rings instead of French fries. Get tortilla chips instead of potato chips. Skip that loaded baked potato. Have yourself a nice salad. Your waistline will thank you. And we'll send a message to the hyper-Republican state of Idaho, the laboratory of MAGA democracy, that your backward ways are not going to engender any economic support from those of us who know better. Boycott Idaho, boycott the potato, avoid the handmade state. And today, oh boy, tough story coming out of Pocatello, Idaho, where police were called by neighbors to a domestic disturbance. Now, at the domestic disturbance, there was a couple and another woman were fighting, and involved in this was someone's 17-year-old son, a 17-year-old who has autism and cerebral palsy. The teenager, 17-year-old Victor Perez, was shot 9 times in this encounter by the Pocatello police. Now, he was in the yard, and he was on the ground when they approached, and he had a large kitchen knife in his hand. And one of the women, presumably his mother, was trying to calm him down, trying to get to him and have him give the knife back, and he would kind of lunge at her and swing a little bit. She was never really close enough to him to be in real danger. He was obviously agitated. Now, the 911 call that went into the police from the neighbor said, well, he seems really drunk. He seems really drunk, and he's swinging a knife around. Because the neighbor doesn't know the kid's autistic and has cerebral palsy, so his movements would be jerky and you know, someone just looking from the outside would look like someone who is drunk. So 911 is called. Police are dispatched to the scene. And here is the moment they pull up.
Oh, yeah, they're here. Yep, I'm watching from out there. Yep, all there. Okay, bye.
Seconds. The cops pulled up to this home on the corner. The young man, the 17-year-old man, is on the ground on his back with the knife in his hand. And the yard he is in is surrounded by a 4-foot-tall chain link fence. He is about probably 12 to 15 feet from the edge of that chain link fence. The 4 cop cars pull up, 4 policemen with long guns and pistols already drawn run to the chain link fence. The boy who's on the ground then begins to get up with the knife and move toward them. And that's when the gunshots ring out. Understand, the boy is on the other side of the chain link fence. It is quite obvious to me from the video that these cops could have backed up. The street was completely blocked off. There was no traffic behind them. When that boy got up, they could have retreated. There was a fence between him and them. He would have had to run to that fence, jump over it, and then attack these cops before they would have been in any danger. The moment those shots rang out, they were in no danger. That boy was nowhere close to being able to get to them with the knife, and there was a fence between them and the boy. We've seen this so many times. We've seen this going back to Cleveland and Tamir Rice, where cops shoot first, ask questions later. And the Pocatello police come back and say, well, these police officers are life-death situations, a moment's notice, the seconds count, heat of the moment. We've got to give them leeway. Bullshit. These cops came out wanting to shoot. And that's the first thing they did. They didn't get any information on who the kid was, what was going on. They see kid with knife and brown skin and shoot him from 12 feet away with long guns from behind a fence. Now, the story's gone national. I saw NBC News, ABC News coverage of this. The Pocatello officers are trying their best to wash this away. But it is clearly, clearly police brutality. You know, I've covered a lot of these cases. I covered a lot of them when I was doing my marijuana podcasting as well, because there's a lot of overlap. We're talking about, you know, police brutality. And there's this, you know, there's a scene in the movie, I think it's Friday, right? And John Witherspoon plays the father character. And I can't remember the exact scene of the line, but it's something to the effect of, you kids these days are all carrying guns around because you're afraid you can't take an ass whooping. I may have butchered the line, but it's something like that. And that's how I feel about cops these days. Like, yeah, there should be, I guess, this idea that you want all your cops to come home safely to their families after a long day's work. But cops feel like they shouldn't even take a chance. Like, these cops are never hit or stabbed or shot before they're shooting and killing someone else. Like, I've always thought in these situations where, you know, they've got a suspect who's holding a gun, if that gun has not gone off, that person shouldn't be shot. If they haven't fired a single shot, neither should the cops. The cops should never shoot first. Now, if the guy is pulling the gun around and aiming it and preparing to shoot, okay, I can see shooting him then. We're not even talking about a guy with a gun. In this case, we're talking about a teenager with a knife who hadn't yet stabbed anybody. He just had a knife in his hands. No cop was even got a paper cut in this scenario. The kid was nowhere near even being able to touch these cops. Are the cops such wusses these days they can't even take a superficial cut to the arm? Or they're wearing body armor, they can't take a possible nick to their Kevlar? Boy, I sure hope this case gains the attention it deserves and the investigation and justice it deserves. Also, I want to follow up on a couple other things that we've covered here in Boycott, Idaho. I told you about the freedom to infect law that the health freedom people put up. This was the one that says no government, no employer, no school, no college can deny entry, service, or employment to any person for any condition, treatment, or vaccination, whether they get them or not. So this was the law that wound its way through the Idaho legislature and got vetoed by Governor Little because it wouldn't allow schools to send home sick kids. Like, you could send your kid to school with active case of the measles and the school could not refuse that kid's entry. Well, they tweaked that law. They went back to the drawing board, tweaked it so that the schools could send home sick kids, but they left everything else and the governor signed it. So the state of Idaho now is a freedom to infect state. No employer can deny you employment based on a vaccination status, a medical treatment, or medical condition. You can be massive head wound Harry with your brains falling out of your skull with viscera dripping from your open wounds, and Sizzler cannot deny you a job working at the salad bar. You could be Typhoid Mary. St. Luke's Hospital cannot stop you from coming to work as a nurse. You can have an active case of Ebola and still show up as you're in your job as a elected senator and just Ebola sneeze all over everybody in the Senate. Nobody can stop you because Idaho is a freedom to infect state. Now, part of the problem with Idaho being a freedom to infect state, and Axios covered this as well, and I wanted to call out Axios on this real quick, because Axios framed this as an expansion of vaccine mandates. So Idaho already had a law from 2020 that said you can't, you know, restrict someone for not getting the COVID-19 vaccine. That's how this started. So Axios says, well, they've just expanded that to all other vaccines. Yes, they have. And any medical treatment, any medical treatment, that you cannot require anything. You can't require someone to put on a Band-Aid over a bloody wound. You can't require anything. Or you can't discriminate against any medical condition. Anybody with any sort of infection, any sort of, and I would imagine, any sort of mental condition might be covered under this as well. You cannot deny them. What's really troubling to this is even before this happened, Idaho is dead last in the United States for vaccinations. In the United States, the median, if I can find the median again, is around 93%, 92% vaccination rates, right? And this is for the MMR, the measles, mumps, rubella, the two doses you have to get that, the five DTaP doses, diphtheria, pertussis, I guess, the four polio doses, and the two VAR doses. And folks, I don't know what all those stand for. I got to be honest, I don't know every single vaccination. But these four columns of vaccination rates, right? So the national estimate, nationwide, we're about 92-93% of your kindergartners are vaccinated for those childhood diseases, the standard, you know, set of childhood diseases, 93-92%. And generally you want 95% for to achieve that herd immunity, because not everyone can get vaccinated. You know, some people are immune compromised. Some people have, you know, weaker systems. They can't take vaccines. So you have to vaccinate everyone else around them so that they don't get infected and infect the person who can't be vaccinated. So when you look at these stats, like I say, it's about 92-93% nationwide. Idaho, 75% of kindergartners. Oh, I'm sorry, looked at the wrong column. 80%, right around 80%. 79.6% for the measles, 79.5% for DTaP, 80% for polio, 79% for VAR. Lowest in the nation. 50th out of 50 states. And the next lowest state, Alaska, clocks in at around 84 on those columns. So Idaho's a full 4 points lower than the worst state next to it. One out of five kindergartners in the state of Idaho does not have their vaccines. One out of five. It's a miracle the measles outbreak is happening in Texas and Oklahoma and New Mexico and not in Idaho. Idaho is rife and ready for a major infection rate to happen with only one out of five kids not having any vaccination at all for anything. 80%. Only American Samoa is lower. Only the territory of American Samoa is lower at the 75. That's where I saw the 75%. Idaho, the freedom to infect state, already with one out of five kindergartners not vaccinated. That's just going to get worse now that these anti-vax parents can't be forced into getting their kids vaccinated. But good news for them. Oh, some good news for the anti-vax people. There's another bill sitting on Governor Little's desk right now waiting to be signed that makes ivermectin available over the counter. That's right. Ivermectin, the horse dewormer. The one that Joe Rogan and Robert F. Kennedy said would be so good for treating COVID-19, which of course turned out to be absolute bunk. Complete wives' tale, foolishness, snake oil salesmen that they are. But ivermectin will be available over the counter. Now, don't worry. Ivermectin only has a few side effects like difficulty in moving, muscle pain or stiffness, pain in the joints, or swollen, painful, or tender lymph glands in the armpit. Less common side effects include black tarry stools, bloating or swelling of the face, arms, hands, lower legs or feet, chest pain, chills, cold sweats, cough, dizziness, lightheadedness, faintness, eye or eyelid irritation, pain, redness, or swelling, fast pounding or irregular heartbeat or pulse, feeling of constant movement or self of surroundings, fever, painful, difficult urination, rapid weight gain, sensation of spinning, shakiness in the legs, arms, hands, or feet, sore throat, sores, ulcers, white spots on the lips or mouth, swollen glands, tingling of the hands or feet, trembling or shaking of the hands or feet, trouble breathing, unusual bleeding or breathing, unusual sleepiness, unusual tiredness or weakness, unusual weight gain or loss, and rare side effects include agitation, back pain, bloody eye, blurred vision, change in consciousness, confusion, decreased awareness or responsiveness, difficulty in standing or walking, hallucinations, headache, irritability, loss of bladder control, loss of bowel control, loss of consciousness, mood or mental changes, redness of the eye, seizures, stiff neck, unusual dullness or feelings of sluggishness and vomiting. Those are just some of the side effects from ivermectin that Idaho is set to make available over the counter without a prescription. But if you want to treat your nausea from cancer chemotherapy by smoking a joint, why, Idaho will arrest you, slap cuffs on you, book you, fingerprint you, mugshot you, give you a permanent criminal record, and a mandatory minimum fine of $300. I want to wrap things up today with a radical rant talking about our concentration camp down in El Salvador. A couple of decisions from the Supreme Court about this shows that we are going to keep being the Nazis, we are going to keep abducting people off the streets without probable cause, without access to lawyers, throwing them into an unmarked van with hooded, masked agents who won't identify themselves to be transferred across borders all the way to El Salvador to a tortured gulag concentration camp prison from which they will never recover and over which United States courts have no jurisdiction. That's us now, folks. We're the bad guys. So the couple court cases came up on this, and one of them was asking the Supreme Court to rule whether or not Trump could continue to use the Alien Enemies Act of 1798... Yeah, 1798 to be able to rendition these people to El Salvador. And the Roberts Court, in a 5-4 decision where Amy Coney Barrett joined with the liberals, 5-4 decision, the Roberts Court said, yeah, you can use the Alien Enemies Act to get rid of these people. You can use the Alien Enemies Act to disappear these people. But they do have the opportunity to make a habeas corpus suit. Habeas corpus, Latin for show the body, which is basically in legal terms, meaning, you know, getting your day in court. So how does that work for the 200 and some odd guys that are already down there in El Salvador? How do they make their habeas petition down there in El Salvador? What is habeas corpus in Spanish anyway? Oh, that's right. They can't make any habeas corpus petitions down there in El Salvador because, as has been already told to us, golly, we don't have any jurisdiction down there. Okay, so aside from the 250 guys that are already down there, the rest of the immigrants that we snatch off the street, why, they have some due process. They can submit a habeas petition. That is, if anyone knows they're gone, if anyone's paying attention when the unmarked guys snatch them off the street and throw them in the van, and get them all the way down to Louisiana and then down to El Salvador before anyone even knows they're gone, they have habeas rights too, apparently. So I guess if you're in this country on a green card or a student visa, maybe even a naturalized citizen, you got brown skin, maybe some tattoos, you should just have a lawyer with you at all times. You should walk around everywhere you go with a lawyer and a habeas petition in his back pocket just in case someone abducts you without your knowledge or any sort of warning or warrant. The other frustrating thing about this in this decision over the Alien Enemies Act is it is a wartime act. Under the Alien Enemies Act, we're supposed to be at war with enemies. That's why we are supposed to be able to get rid of them, is because we are at war with them. We have declared a war and they are our enemies. Do you recall when we declared war against Venezuela? I don't recall declaring war against Venezuela. So far, all I've heard is that there's this terrible gang called Tren de Aragua. Is that right? Tren de Aragua. Have we declared war against them? No, there's no congressional declaration of war against this street gang either. So it appears to me that the Roberts Court just completely bypassed that part of the decision, the fact that we're not at war, to allow the president to unilaterally decide who is an enemy, to snatch them up off the street without a warrant or warning, and to rendition them down to El Salvador's torture gulag. And the administration officials, of course, are loving it. Tom Homan, the human thumb that's running our Gestapo, the head of ICE, says he wants this to become more efficient. He wants it to become like Amazon Prime for humans. Like Amazon Prime for humans. Boy, dehumanize much, do we? Now they're just packages, huh? I'll tell you what, Tom Homan. In a sense, Amazon Prime for humans would be an improvement over what we're doing now, because Amazon Prime can tell me what is in every package. Amazon Prime can tell me where those packages are at all times, and Amazon Prime will take returns. Amazon Prime for humans, you disgusting piece of crap. And then, speaking of disgusting pieces of crap, the puppy killer, canicide Marvel, Christy Noem, the head of our DHS, the cosplay Barbie out there always. Did you see the picture of her down there with the ice guys and she's got the machine gun aimed at the guy's head? She's in her cosplay costume with the tack vest on and everything, and she's got the semi-auto weapon in her hands, angled at this guy's head while she's talking, fully locked and loaded. All right. Can I stand on the other side, please? Anyway, Christy Noem says that everyone that goes to that prison there should be kept there forever. They should be kept there forever because they're violent criminals. They're violent, terrible criminals, gang members, the worst of the worst. They need to be kept there forever. And the head of that El Salvadorian prison has even spoken similarly, saying nobody leaves this prison. This is your last stop. You get to this prison, this is where you die. Despite the fact that 60 Minutes, and by the way, quick correction, I'd said on the previous podcast, it was CBS or somebody. I got it wrong. It's 60 Minutes. Well, yeah, CBS is 60 Minutes. I think I said NBC. Regardless. Anyway, 60 Minutes investigated these guys, found out that 75% of them that we sent down there have no criminal record whatsoever. Christy Noem thinks they should stay there forever. These men with no criminal record, whose major offense was being Venezuelan in the United States while sporting tattoos, should spend the rest of their lives in a torture gulag. And we pay for them to be there. Our taxpayer money sent to El Salvador to house the worst of the worst, 75% of whom aren't even criminals. And of the other 25% who had criminal records, almost a fourth of them, their criminal record was, you know, speeding, traffic violation, disturbing the peace, drunk and disorderly, stuff like that. Minor stuff. But you know what? Even the worst of them, the terrible rapist murderer criminals among them, if there are any, should not be in our El Salvador concentration camp either. We have a system of justice in the United States, and we got plenty of prisons. Oh, big old supermax prisons. They'd hold them just fine. Problem is, if you hold them in the United States, gosh darn it, they can talk to lawyers, and they can visit their family, and they can get the word out about how we're torturing them, how we're mistreating them, and how some of them aren't even criminals at all. That's why we're housing them there in El Salvador, so we can get away with it. It's disgusting, it's anti-American, and people need to be brought up on charges when this is all over, and not just in America. I'm talking International Criminal Court in The Hague. Christy Noem needs to go to The Hague. Tom Holman needs to go to The Hague. I don't know that we'll ever erase this stain on America's legacy in my lifetime. I sure hope we get around to doing it soon, though. So that was the one case, the Alien Enemies Act case, where the Roberts Court, 5-4, said, yeah, go ahead. Keep on doing that. No problem. Even though we're not at war, they're not really enemies. But go ahead. The other case is the case of Kilmar Armando Abrego Garcia. This is the man, the El Salvadorian man, who was specifically ordered by our courts to not be deported because he had sought asylum, because returning him to El Salvador would subject him to being murdered, tortured, beaten. It was already ordered for him not to be deported, but we went ahead and deported him anyway. And the administration has admitted it was a complete mistake, an administrative error, as they put it. But then they threw up their hands and said, oh, gosh, can't do anything now. He's in El Salvador. We can't do anything once he's in El Salvador. Well, this case went through the courts, and judges have said, no, we have jurisdiction over your ass, and your ass is going to bring his ass back, or we're going to throw your ass in jail. The judges had already put the order out that they were to return the man by midnight a couple days ago, when John Roberts, all alone on his lonesome there, stepped in and put a stay on that order. So, nope, hold on. Don't release that guy yet. We need to discuss it further in the Supreme Court. That was 2 days ago. And folks, it's just more than a little concerning that such a slam dunk case, the government's already admitted he shouldn't be there. They made a mistake putting him there. The people that put him there are under the jurisdiction of our courts. This is a slam dunk. There is no gray area here. The government messed up. The courts ordered Abrego Garcia returned. The fact that Roberts thinks this needs to be discussed further, and that it's been 2 days of discussion so far with no answer, that tells me they're trying to find a way to keep him there. They're trying to maneuver their way like they did around Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, where they knew it's crystal clear insurrectionists can't run for office, but we got to find an excuse to let this one run for office. It is crystal clear that Abrego Garcia should not be in that prison and should be returned, but they can't let him out. Not now. Oh no, not now that he's seen what's going on down there. Not now that the government has admitted they made a mistake in putting him there. Not now when he'd return and first thing you know be on Rachel Maddow's show spilling the tea about our concentration camp. We can't have that. Maybe if we just delay it a couple days, 2-3 days, maybe those Trende Arugua guys, Aragua, maybe they'll get a hold of him. Maybe those enemies that wanted him dead, that we weren't supposed to deport him over because they'd kill him, maybe they'll get to him first. Maybe they'll get to him first and kill him, and then we can come back and say, oh yeah, he should have been released. Yeah, see, that way the court can say, yep, we made the right decision, we were just a little late. Or maybe if the days go on long enough, they can't keep delaying it, and they just make the decision they want to make anyway. Whose arm does Roberts got to twist to get that 5-4 decision? He knows he doesn't have the three liberals. Will Amy Coney Barrett stay on their side as well and uphold, you know, the law? Does he have to promise Kavanaugh a couple of kegs? Maybe another RV for Clarence Thomas? Does Sam Alito's wife have a flag for the occasion? I am just mortified about the possibility of this decision coming out 5-4 to keep Abrego Garcia there. And that's just one more step. One more step leading us to the military dictatorship in this country that Donald Trump needs to prevent a 2026 election from holding him to account. All right, folks, that's all the time we've got for today's podcast. Thanks for joining us. And if you would, tell other folks about this podcast. Pass it along. I'm just someone yammering at you for about an hour every morning on your commute. Could be worse, right? The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by freestockmusic.com and by VTEMO, courtesy of freetouse.com/music. You can contact me by email at radicalruss@gmail.com. Contact my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as radicalruss.com and nowhere else. And time for your post-credit scene here. Did you hear that Donald Trump wants to put together a $100 million military parade 4 miles long to take place on his birthday? Like I said, we're going full North Korea here, full Pyongyang. Going to have the military parade, even though the experts told him in his first administration this would be a terrible idea. The streets of Washington, D.C. aren't fortified enough to have tanks and missile batteries running up and down Pennsylvania Avenue. Never mind that. I suppose they'll just put that expense of fixing the roads back on the people of D.C. Lord knows the federal government won't fix that. Absolutely disgusting he would call for a military parade on his birthday. And here's the really troubling part. His birthday is June 14th. June 14th, 2025 is also the 250th birthday of the United States Army. So that's how he's going to get away with it, folks. He's going to say this is a celebration of America's military. It's a celebration of the Army's birthday. And if you don't support it, why, you're unpatriotic and you hate America. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at RadicalRuss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other.
you manage, you